Great. So my name is Michael Zrid. I'm here with the Oral History Summer School at Hudson, New York. This is the 16th of June, 2014. I'm here at Phil Gellert's office at 524 Columbia Street in Hudson. And I'm going to begin by asking you, sir, to introduce yourself.
Yeah, Phil Gellert, and I live in Hillsdale, New York. I'm about to celebrate my 60th reunion from the Rolf Janssen School in Hillsdale. My wife Joan and I raised five children who all grew up in the area, with four daughters out west, and my son lives here, and he and his family have three youngsters who went to the local school, now Taconic Hills. So we have four generations, because my parents bought a summer home in Hillsdale in 1946, moved up permanently in 1951, and was in the poultry business. So we started as poultry farmers. And followed my father, went to Cornell, and my three brothers who followed me to Cornell, three of our five kids, and Brother George had three kids, my brother Bob had three kids go to Cornell, my brother Joe one out of two, and now we have a grandson. So we have a Cornell tradition in the family. And started as a poultry farm, went into, started buying agricultural lands and farms about 40 years ago. About 40 years ago, you could buy a farm and it was like spinning a top. You could make enough money from the farm to carry the cost. Taxes were very low, and I could make enough money from the farm to carry the cost of the acquisition. So I was a dairy farmer. I had four grape vineyards, fruit farm, Christmas tree, beef cattle, and accumulated about a little over 4,000 acres. But the land needed income, and the agricultural income was not sufficient to fully support the farm, so I went into the rental business, first out of the city of Hudson, elsewhere in Columbia County, a little over 40 years ago. Almost 40 years ago, Charles Nichols, who was the vice president of a local bank, a mortgage officer, called me and asked me if I'd like to buy a building from the bank at 525 Prospect Street. He said he'd sell me this building, nothing down, but the bank would like to sell it because they had an old lady who lived there who just wouldn't pay the mortgage, and he felt they would get a lot of bad publicity if they tried to evict her. So that was my first acquisition in Hudson almost 40 years ago. Turns out that this lady was a little odd. She had monkeys in her house. So I went to the neighbors were complaining about the smell from the monkeys. I asked the Dale Ralph and the Board of Health what he could do. He said there's nothing in Hudson's zoning code against monkeys. So it was sort of a problem. The neighbors would complain but wouldn't file a petition. Health department couldn't do anything. And the ladies, on top of that, wouldn't pay me money, or my rent money either. Finally, she gave me a bad check. And when I threatened to press charges, she said she would move to Albany. And to my surprise, slowly she paid everything that she owed. It doesn't happen too often that happens. I think that building was really like the history of Hudson, because you very seldom, I don't think you'll find buildings for $13,000. The last, I sold it a number of years ago for the mid-80s. I think the building was resold for $150,000, then it was sold for $180,000, and I understand last year that building was sold for over $200,000. Over the years, I accumulated about 40 buildings in Hudson. I sold 18, which leaves me with 22. I have one under contract now that I expect to be selling this month. But some of the buildings, I've invested in four of the 22 buildings that I have now in the last 3 years. So, you know, whenever you hear the argument, well, I should have bought 10 years ago or 20 years ago or 30 years ago, or like I did 35 plus 40 years ago, I think 5 years from now people will still say that. I think there are a lot of opportunities. The big difference now is that it's accelerating at a much faster pace. When I bought this building for $13,000, it took probably 30 years to keep, or 28 years to accumulate up to $85,000. Then in 8 years, it tripled very fast. And I think that's what's happening. I see many of the buildings that I've sold in Hudson in the last few years where in a two-year period, they'll change ownership. And I think it's wonderful because you have a different lifestyle in Hudson, which has a lot of advantages. The one big disadvantage of what's happening in Hudson is it's making it a lot harder to be a landlord. When I bought a building on State Street, I think that was 1968. One tenant was in that building for 47 years. Another tenant was there for 29 years. Now, as a landlord, I'm lucky to have tenants stay 2 years, 3 years. You have a transit population. A lot of the people who lived in Hudson for years and raised their family in Hudson, unfortunately, are moving out of Hudson. You also have a problem in Hudson that it's not affordable for a lot of people. We have no vacancies. I can't think of a period of time that I've had no vacancies in Hudson for this long a period. That's because as I and as others sell properties in Hudson, like this building I happen to be selling to Eric Galloway, there aren't any tenants involved, but if there are, they'll require all the tenants to vacate, and it's making it extremely hard for a tenant to be in Hudson and to find a place to live at an affordable level. From a landlord standpoint, though, it's more difficult to be a landlord. Population of Hudson is about maybe two-thirds of what it was 15 or 20 years ago. The police force is probably 25% more. So it's easy to say to blame it on the landlord. But you have, unfortunately, a certain element that makes it very difficult for landlords. 30 years ago, 20 years ago, we had a landlord association. There were about 12 to 15 of us that used to gather together, discuss our landlord problems together as a group. I'm the only one left. Okay. I think that's somewhat because...
The only local one.
The only local one left. My wife is correcting me. The only local one left. There are landlords. But I think for most that I don't know where they're... Landlords that are renting to the local people, the people that are lower wage earners, and it's a difficult. It's a lot more difficult to rent to some of the people now than it was 15 or 20 years ago. We used to do one eviction a year. Now I'm in Hudson Court continuously for evictions. Most of my properties are out of the city of Hudson. And yet, most of my evictions are in the city of Hudson. We have about 60-some-odd buildings, and as I say...
That's what you just called.
Okay, thank you very much. Continue.
Okay, we have about 60 some odd buildings, and only about a third are in Hudson, but 90% of our problems are in Hudson. We have some very good tenants, but it's hard to get very good tenants in the city of Hudson. Now, maybe this will change because there are no vacancies. We can be more selective. But we went through a period until recently where you could not be as selective as you would like. But I think you see signs. You see a building on Warren Street. I noticed this week. I don't know if they'll get it, but they're advertising it for $1,999,999. I mean, it's sort of mind-boggling.
A huge shift.
Yeah. I don't think they expect to get that, but whatever they get, I'm sure it'll be significantly higher than what they paid for the building. And I see it. I see from what I paid for the buildings and what they're worth now. I would, not that I don't think Hudson has a future, but I would like to divest in some of the rental properties because they are time-consuming. And I like to travel. I leave next week to take two grandkids to Uganda and look at the gorillas. In October, my wife and I are going to visit a granddaughter who's in Malaysia on a Fulbright scholarship. So I would almost like to travel somewhere once a month. Having rental properties make it tough. My secretary, I'm fortunate, it's going on her 35th year and runs a lot of it, but it's still hard. We have about 20 people that renovate these buildings, and we try to be responsive, but it's always easy to blame the landlord. Once a person is evicted, they tell their relatives, and they can always blame the landlord. I can't think of how many times when we evict somebody, suddenly they'll call the building inspector. I mean, there's always reasons. One other thing which I've noticed, made note of, I noticed one of the buildings that, not noticed how it's changed. I remember I bought a building which I still own, 449 451 State Street, and bought it in 1968. And it was next to a bar, Charlie's Bar, whatever you called it. About 6 years after I bought it, I rented to an African-American girl named Ramel Hemingway. Right away, the bartender came out and said, "I'm ruining the neighborhood. We don't want any colored or any African-Americans in this part of the town." I reminded him that it was the United States, and I'm free to rent whoever I want to rent. And if he doesn't like it, too bad. But he went out of his way for years to make trouble for me, because this is what I did. But we've always had a practice of not discrimination. And my workforce has always been multiracial. There's a picture on my wall when I grew up on a poultry farm. We had five religions right on the wall. My family raised a boy, Carmen Barbado, who was from Italy. He grew up in our family and has a dumpster business and bulldozing business. In Hillsdale. Next one was a boy from Thailand. Then there was a boy from Iran and a boy from Polish descent, and my brothers. This past weekend, one of the gentlemen who was up in Hillsdale visiting us, when he went to Cornell, if you went to the College of Agriculture and you were not on a farm, you had to get farm experience. So my parents wanted to expose my brothers and I to as many backgrounds as possible. So we had a boy then from Malaysia. He said that his uncle arranged for him to get a scholarship. His uncle managed rubber plantation. When my brother Bob was in Vietnam, my folks visited him, and they found out that he was a multi-millionaire. He arranged when Nixon went to Red China. My brothers, three brothers, are all very successful in the food importing business, to visit Red China. My brother was the second, one of my brothers was the second American businessman in Red China. Now it was, this boy is now a man, just celebrated his 50th reunion at Cornell. He was up in Hillsdale. Was very gracious to my granddaughter, who's on his Fulbright in Malaysia. And, you know, it's nice how you can maintain contacts with people from all over the world. And it's good. And we've always, with my workforce, I've always had a multinational, South American, Central America, African Americans. I really don't care. I just, as long, I might be not the easiest to work for because I'm a little more demanding, but we try to have a fair policy. And, you know, I think Hudson, I think it has a, you know, now you get all these, all the articles and publicity and nice places to eat. And, you know, you take, it just,
I can just barely hear
you now.
Hello?
That picture.
You can go ahead. Go, keep going.
Okay. On a wall in our office, I have pictures where, when I was in the grape business, I used to have four grape vineyards, and I did custom harvesting for other people. And there I had Vietnamese who lived with us after the Vietnamese War. There's also a picture of a fellow, Thomas Van Alstyne, an African-American, who started working for me on one of my farms in Claremont about 45 years ago. Relatives of his still rent for me. So, you know, it's over a long... he ended up working first for me and then for my brother, for my son, rather, for about 40 years. And, you know, I think it's... I think Hudson, all the attractions, it's going to improve and accelerate. And it's very good. I have my grandson, who lives in Hillsdale, is going to work at Helsinki this summer. As soon as we get back from Uganda, he's 15, and that'll be his first job. And he's going to work as a busboy at Helsinki. So, you know, there are opportunities for youngsters if you want to work. He doesn't drive yet, so I'm not sure how he's going to get here. But he'll find a way. Maybe he'll have to ride with me, but...
I'll be working at night.
So anyhow, but you know, the restaurants have offered opportunities for people to work. You have a much more diverse community, and you know, I've seen a lot of changes, and I think now there'll be a lot of changes in the future, which will be very positive.
I'm very interested in everything that you're saying. It's an incredibly interesting story, and I'm just going to, I made a couple of notes of things to come back to. One thing you mentioned, the Landlord Association, that sounds like a really interesting history.
Yeah, we had for many years a Landlord Association. Some of the people, our fellow Ron Kaplan is still around, but he's a realtor. He sold all his buildings. The Gazzolas, I believe, sold all their buildings. Those were two prominent landlords. There was a fellow, Diley, who was an attorney. I think I know I'm the only one left who's still a landlord. It's a landlord in Hudson, you almost have to be like a duck and let water bounce off your back. Because I don't have an unlisted phone. They can call me at any time. I'm not an absentee landlord. And I try, if there's a problem, like your tenant needed a new stove, or I try to react to it to the best of my ability. I'm certainly not perfect, but at least we try to do our best. And I think it's unfortunate, but there's going to be even a more severe problem for the people in Hudson. I can't blame somebody like myself that will take a building that used to be, our rents in Great Barrington are almost 40%. We have one house in Barrington that's almost 40% higher than Columbia County, the same in Dutchess County. And Hudson is going up, and it's not affordable now, and it's going to be worse. But as we fix our apartments, we're learning too, because instead of carpets, we'll use what they call floating floor. And we'll go through the trouble of sanding the floors to bare wood. We'll eliminate drop ceilings, which were a cheap way to go years ago, but we'll put sheetrock. And then we're replacing our old windows with new thermal pane windows. And feeling that if the tenant has less to pay for the utilities, they have more money left over. And the fourth thing we're trying to do is get rid of copper pipes. Because first, it's unfortunately people like to steal copper. And secondly, if they break, they're more trouble. They freeze easier, and they're more trouble to install. So I think almost everybody is switching to this PEX tubing, which is a plastic tubing. So those four things, expensive initially, but in the long run, they'll pay. And once we take a building and go through all that and spend all that money, although we're not at the level that somebody from New York might want to pay, we may be close to that. And that's out of the income level of a lot of the people in Hudson. And now when we sell a building, like we sold last year, the year before, 410 Warren Street, which was my old office, they agreed to keep one of the tenants. The other tenant, we had to find other combinations for. They upgraded it and moved there themselves. And that's what's happening. Some of the buildings that I sold to Eric Galloway, who's now the biggest landlord in Hudson, Galvin Associates, he's left them vacant for years until he can upgrade them. And none of the buildings are rented to the local people. And that's what's happening. It's being multiplied, and it's going to make it more and more difficult, for local people. But it's, in a way, it's good, because it's upgrading, it's lifting the whole area. It's making it, I think it's positive in one sense, because look, you have a whole new culture scene. You have restaurants. You have different places you can go to. It's makes it more attractive. You're not off the beaten path as much anymore. I mean, I grew up in the area, but I also like to enjoy like a show at Stageworks or something like that, or going to a restaurant. So it's. They're changes, and they're going to continue to be changes.
One of the changes that is not so positive is I've heard from local people that there was much more a sense of community in Hudson before, and that's being lost because the population is so transient. And I think that makes difficulties for the schools, and it makes difficulties for the neighborhoods.
Yeah. I think another thing which is happening in Hudson, though, it's all through Columbia County, it's so easy to live in an area like Hudson or Columbia County and work elsewhere. And this is, my son lives in Hillsdale. He goes to New York, on Wednesday night, comes back Friday night. I have a daughter who lives in Crested Butte, Colorado, but she works out of Crested Butte. This weekend she was up visiting us. She was working in New York, then she took the train to Washington instead of flying, and she'll be back in New York now. She came up for the weekend, back in New York, then she'll go up back out to Colorado. And people with a fax, cell phone, computer, they can accomplish so much more. And I mean, it's so much, it's a whole different lifestyle out here as opposed to New York. I plant a humongous garden, most of which I give away. But I think it's wonderful. You drive through the countryside and you see all these fresh farm markets. I went over to the Hudson Farm Market Saturday when I was in Hudson. And, I mean, it's at least 25% bigger than it was last year. And I looked and I know a lot of the merchants, local people, who have farm markets. And this whole concept of fresh food. It's farm fresh. I think of beef. When I used to raise beef for my kids, and they'd complain about grass-fed beef because it was tough. But now that's what people want, or fresh chickens. And fresh vegetables. I mean, I've been having fresh asparagus for 6 weeks now, and fresh pea pods and lettuce that you grow. But even if you don't grow your own, it's at least there. And I think what's nice is a lot of the people moving up to this area realize the advantages of being able to be in an area where you can obtain fresh. The air is cleaner. Products are better. It's a lot to sell for Hudson.
And the surrounding communities.
The community, the space. You got a spacious, and you're not tied up bumper to bumper traffic. My three brothers, we all grew up on this poultry farm. They do business with 40 some odd countries throughout the world. But I'm comfortable being a country boy. I think I have a lot of advantages living in Columbia County and, driving to Hudson from Hillsdale as opposed to driving to New York City. So I like to travel. I travel all over the world, but I like to come back to Hillsdale or Columbia County as opposed to having to beat the traffic in New York City or New Jersey. So I think I'm more fortunate in one sense than my brothers, who, even though they, what I do is small compared to them, but I have the advantages of having a different lifestyle in a different area, even if it means working in the garden on a weekend.
I'm really interested in what you were saying about food and agriculture, and you said you began on a farm. Yes. Can you tell me?
Yeah, we had a poultry farm. We were the largest poultry farm in New York State at one time. We had about 80,000 chickens. I applied to the art school. My father studied civil engineering at Cornell. I applied to the art school at Cornell, and then a friend said, "Why are you in the art school? You ought to be in the ag school." So I switched. Double registered with the graduate business school and then switched to graduate school. And in those days, you could be an undergraduate and also take graduate work at Cornell. One of my brothers triple registered, ag graduate and ag school, graduate business and law. My other two brothers did ag school, graduate business school. My son and oldest daughter did ag school, graduate business school. And two of our daughters got waylaid. They went to Brown, but our youngest went to Cornell. And now we have a grandson there. But my interest was always in agriculture. Even though I have the apartments, my main interest was farming. And as I say, I was a poultry farmer, I was a dairy farmer, beef, grape vineyards. And it's nice because farming as what I knew when I grew up disappeared. But now you see organic farming coming back.
And small farms,
but at least land is being kept in agriculture. And I think that's important. There was a period of time where farm after farm went out and it wasn't replaced. And now you see people who maybe had successful careers in Wall Street, and they're coming back to be a farmer. And I remember a story my father told me about these two businessmen that were vacationing in Canada, and they saw an Indian fishing by the next to a stream. Next day, they saw the Indian in the same place. So they said, they went to the Indian and said, why aren't you working? Well, I see you fish. And the Indian said, why? Well, if you work hard and successful, and the Indian said, so, and then you can retire. And then, well, what am I going to do when I retire? Well, then you can hunt and fish. And the Indian said, that's what I'm doing now. So I still remember that story because a lot of it is true. Why? And I think more people you find in Columbia County are finding that, be it a bed and breakfast that they're opening, be it a community garden, but they're finding things which maybe are more what they want to do, and they're not waiting until they hit retirement age to do it. And that's why I always enjoyed it. Now I'm just a part-time farmer. Between what I gave my kids, it's several thousand acres, but the only active farming I do now is this big garden where I raise about 40 different vegetables, fruits, vegetables, and it's, as I say, most of it I give it away. Someone asked why I don't take it to the farm market, and I told them then it wouldn't be a hobby, so I don't do that. But I like to ski, I like to hunt, I'm an avid deer hunter. I've skied in this year, Switzerland, Italy, United States. I've skied six states, New York, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Vermont, Colorado, Oregon, Utah. My daughters are all out west, so I go out there to ski. I like to be on the slopes when it opens and ski till the end of the day. And my wife visits them other parts of the time. And it's nice. I like to exercise. I go to the local school and I do 2-3 miles on the track around a little after 5 in the morning. And I go into the, and I'm the only one on the track at that time. And then at Conic Hills, they have a fitness center and cost a big $50 a year. And I work out from 6 till about 6:45, take a shower and go on the Hudson. And, you know, it's peaceful. And there aren't many people there, and I'm not in a crowded gym, and it's nice. And then at night, I like to read. Our television hasn't worked for maybe 4 years. The only thing I'll do is watch some movies, but I don't watch television. If I have time, like when I travel, I like to read. And that's another hobby. But I hope I never retire. I was at a closing 3 years ago, and there were 3 lawyers there, and all of them said they want to retire. That's not my cup of tea. I hope I never retire.
And can you tell me about that? Why wouldn't you want to retire?
I don't want to retire. I want to keep. I enjoy work. I enjoy work. I enjoy working in the garden. I enjoy traveling. I like to ski. I like to hunt. I mean, there are problems being in the real estate business in Hudson. No question about it. I often get asked, why do I do it? But, you know, nothing is black and nothing is white. It's a shade of gray. And there
are problems in every business.
Problems in every business. My father studied engineering at Cornell. Left in the Depression, went into ladies' clothing business and ended up a poultry farmer. And people asked him, how can you go from a ladies' clothing business to a poultry farm. And he said the principles are the same. You're dealing with people, you're dealing with business, you're selling things, and it's the same in real estate. It's the same whatever you do. I mean, the same principles. And, you know, I don't mind work. I my wife doesn't always share my enthusiasm of wanting to travel to some foreign country once a month. But,
a bit much.
She said it's a bit much. But I want to keep moving.
You told that story back in 1968 when you had the African-American tenant and the resistance that you got from the person at the bar. Can you talk a little bit more about how race relations have worked in Hudson?
That person was extremely vocal. And I think it's difficult. There are some landlords that did discriminate. Not only race, but maybe gender gap. I remember in Taconic, I rented the same farmhouse, which my wife was talking to two ladies, and they wanted to be in an isolated place where nobody would bother them. One was a professor at Bard College, and the other went to Albany, and this was halfway in between. And I was fortunate because our parents encouraged my brothers and I to have a broad viewpoint, and we try to instill that upon our children. I sometimes talk to my grandchildren, and I say, look, if you see any bullying in the class, go out of your way. If you see anybody that's being discriminated against, go out of the way. When we moved to Hillsdale, for a while I was the only Jewish person in my class. When my son went to Rojan, or Taconic Hills, he was the only Jewish person in his class. My grandson, still the only one. But now there's some, now my grandson has some, where they're mixed. We have sort of an international family. I have a granddaughter who's Chinese. I have an Israeli son-in-law. And I have a son-in-law that was born in India who's a Muslim. So the world's getting smaller. And I think that's in Hudson, too. We rent to Bangladesh. I found most of them wonderful tenants. And I've sold them a number of properties also. I don't think you have now. I don't think there's a part of Hudson, at least where my properties are, that I know where there's any discrimination. But we did have that. We had it not only in Hudson. Same time period, I moved a brother of this gentleman, Van Alstein, Malcolm Van Alstein, who also worked for me, to Copake Falls. And I immediately got two phone calls that what I was doing. And again, I had to tell them, this is United States, I'll rent to whoever I want. 40 some odd years later, he still does some part-time work for me. One of his son ended up being captain of a football team in Taconic Hills and became the first member of his family to go to college, which was nice. Of course, another daughter is on welfare, but you have that contrast. And I used to. Another daughter is a teacher. So I followed the son to college. And when the son was growing up, I used to jog with him because he lived not too far from us to encourage him. He became a standout football player in high school. I'd get him to jog with me on weekends. So, I think Hudson has become. You still see some discrimination, but it's too bad. It's too bad. You always will have it.
We tried to help him improve his high school record. by getting him into a private school locally.
Yeah.
And overheard the committee discussing whether or not to accept him and what terms they would accept him on. And he heard comments that were somewhat derisive about him, and I think it spurred him to prove them wrong. So it wasn't a lost cause, even though he didn't get in.
So, I think now the fact that Hudson is more diverse, I don't think, there's always some discrimination. I don't think you can help that. Discriminations against immigrants, discriminations against people of color, you'll always have people of religion, and you'll always have that. But I think there are more people that are broad-minded to counter that. And I think that's a positive. And I think especially now, as you get the influx of people that are moving into the city, it's making a big difference. It's a big difference. I opened a restaurant. I had a building. I rented a restaurant in Philmont. I rented a storefront for a Chinese restaurant, and nice family. The local kids threw eggs at the Chinese kids. That would never happen today. They drove them out. That would never happen today. But this was 15 years ago, and they got away. They got away with that. That never happened in Hudson today either. But years ago, like if this guy from the bar Charlie, now I think it's ironical. He's probably turning over his grave. A very nice Muslim lady owns a bar. Well, it's now a bar. She has a laundromat there. I get along very well with her. And I think it's good. Charlie's probably turning over in his grave, though, because he never changes his viewpoint. And you can't change some people, but maybe you could change the next generation. And I think that's important. When I moved to Rojan, the local school, in my sophomore year, no comments, and not to be derogatory, but they made a few comments about my religion. I got in a few fights. After that, I got along fine. I was president of my class. I enjoyed my whole time in school. But when my son was on the bus, he came home one day crying. And he didn't want to go back to school because some of the kids were making derogatory religious comments.
They were chanting about you.
So my wife was going to talk to the principal. I said no. I told my son, who wasn't a fighter, I said, you just stand up and say, I'm proud of being Jewish. Are you proud of being mentally retarded? He did that, and that ended it right there. Everybody looked at the kid who was, wasn't too bright anyhow. Who was leading it, not too bright, and that ended it. My grandson today, who's in a local school, my youngest grandson, has none of those problems because, and this is how it changed, and I'm sure it's changed just like a change at Taconic Hills. A change in Hudson, where he has friends of the different religions and different backgrounds, and they have kids now. It's not as diverse. Hillsdale's, Taconic Hills, is not as diverse as Hudson, but it's still slowly getting there. But Hudson is diverse, and I think that's good. And I think the people that rent in Hudson are a more diverse group, and I think that's a very positive thing.
After that incident with our son, I went into the school and volunteered to do presentations on the Jewish holidays. And I used to have kids come up to me and say, I'm part Jewish. I wish I was Jewish. Things like that. So you can change it. I made myself stand out as a person they could go to and talk about it if they wanted to.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure there are landlords that still discriminate. And I don't think you can, they might do it, maybe not, but I think that would be the minority today rather than the majority. I don't think there's any room for any discrimination of any sort. And I know I never did. But, you know, it's been a long ride, almost 40 years in Hudson as a landlord, close to it. And I think it has a tremendous future.
You've mentioned a couple people. Are there other significant relationships you've had growing up or with people in the town?
Well, in Hudson, I think basically...
In Hudson or in Hillsdale?
Yeah, see, because I lived in Hillsdale, you know, a lot of my ties were in the community of Hillsdale. And I think, like now when we have our 60th reunion, they're going to have a Rojan reunion for all classes. And that's going to be in August, the third week in August, second week in August. And the following day, on Sunday, I've written to all members of the class to have them in our house for Sunday. And I've tried to keep in touch with them. Unfortunately, after 60 years, there are only about half of us left. But I think one thing about living in the country, like we do, it encourages you to have a close knit family. I think, and a lot of what my wife and I do involves around our family. I visited all four daughters, and I skied with them out west. I'm taking the two grandkids, my son's two boys, out to Uganda with me next week to go on a gorilla trek.
Kids all try to get home for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, we try to get all our kids. When I mentioned I want to go to...
And we've gone on family vacations. Phil has three brothers, and... One of his brothers married one of my sisters. And so the kids are double related. And in New York City, those who are in and around New York City meet once a month. And so we're trying to keep the generations in touch with one another. And all the generations try to get home for Thanksgiving. My sister has a huge house. And she accommodates everybody one way or another.
Now I'm going to start. I one of the places I want to go, I'm going to Malaysia with my wife. We were there a number of years ago to visit our granddaughter and also see this gentleman who was there last week. But I mentioned I want to go to Myanmar. And my wife isn't keen on Myanmar. So one of my daughters who was up said she'll go. So I think my next thing is to take each one of our kids on a trip, because I have a bucket list of places I want to go, and most of them, my wife, I want to ski in Chile in the summer, I want to go on the Shangri-La, I want to trek the Mongolian border, and some of the places, a few years ago I asked my wife if she wants to join me in going into Botswana, and Zambia and Zimbabwe. But it was sleeping in the mud hut, and she wasn't too keen on that. So I still got a lot of places.
There are reasons for that.
I got a lot of places I'd like to go to, and while I still can. On some of the trips that I go, I'm the only senior citizen, but I still like to go. But a lot of it is family related. Two of my brothers have summer homes in Hillsdale now, of my three brothers, and one has our old family homestead. The other being always has foreign visitors up, so we always have contacts that way, and it's nice. I'm very active in Cornell activities. There's a Cornell Club of the Berkshires, and last week we heard they had an event at Stockbridge where a lady who wrote a book on Norman Rockwell spoke, a Cornell author, and it turns out my daughter-in-law is going to be the CFO of the Norman Rockwell Museum. So when this gentleman from Malaysia was up, I figured I'm a little embarrassed to trade in my backyard. I've never been there, so Friday we went to the Rockwell Museum. But there's always contacts like that. Last night we were at McCadden Theater, and my sister-in-law was there with my wife, and there was a gentleman from Brazil visiting, my brother, and there was a lawyer who went to Cornell, for a local Hudson lawyer, Paul Friedman. And I introduced him to my sister-in-law because her son played 150 football with Paul Friedman at Cornell. She had two boys and a girl, but one of them played 150s. And I said, when he comes up from 4th of July, you should call Paul up. So there's a lot of contacts that way. And it's nice. I've been very active in interviewing kids and trying to get more youngsters to go to Cornell. One of the things which I've done for years is I provide, I call it the Gellert Cornell Invitational, where I'll provide two sweatshirts to every school in Columbia and Green for two youngsters who have the ability to go to a school like Cornell. And one of the local people, Jim Macker, he handles that for me. Hopefully we can get more people to go.
One of the things that was very special years ago in at the Rojan School, because it was so small, was that teachers were there for a very long period, and so they taught people from several generations. And so they all knew your family, and that sort of kept, and that's how Hudson was, you know, years and years ago. And that community feeling is something that has been lost over the years.
Maybe my wife's right, probably right on that, yeah.
So that's a change that's not as positive, but there's no way to backtrack that. Schools can't afford to be small anymore. So Norman Rockwell was an artist who in his work expressed the best about American community life.
You've mentioned you've traveled a tremendous amount with your family. Did you travel as a child, or did your parents travel?
No, my parents were both immigrants. My father from Hungary, my mother from Russia, but I didn't go out of the United States for maybe 10 years after we were married. My wife and I got married. We went to Fort Benning, Georgia for my honeymoon. I reported for Army duty. And it was at least 10 years before I traveled. And at that time, when I went out of the country, we visited a sister who was living in Spain. I slept most of the time. I was exhausted. But now I travel quite a bit. I've been to most of Africa. I've been to China 3 times in the last 5 or 6 years.
When my grandfather died, and he left me a little bit of money, and you asked me what I wanted to do with it, and I said, I wanted to travel, remember?
But now I travel a lot.
That's when you started.
But now I like to travel all over the world, and I do.
My mother's father was born in Russia. His father was born in Hungary. My father was born in Russia. His mother was born in Russia. So, you know, there was a history. And that's how we got started. But now I have 4 daughters to visit. So that's a lot of traveling,
isn't it? My wife visits the daughters for quality time. I visit them to go skiing with them. So, and they're all avid skiers. All 5 of our kids have run a New York Marathon. One daughter who's in Bend, Oregon, tells me 3 weeks ago she was in this race where she skied down Bachelor. She's in Bend. They still have snow. She skied down Bachelor. Then she had a cross-country 2 miles. Then she had to do a 5K. Then she had a kayak 2 miles. And then she had to sprint a mile. So, you know, another daughter gets up at 4 o'clock in the morning and jogs.
Because she has two little children, and she has to go when her husband is there, because he's working and she's working.
Fortunately, all my grandkids exercise. So I know when I started jogging years ago, people used to make fun of you if you ran, but I didn't do it to compete in any events. I just did it because I was active in sports.
And because you wanted our children to do it.
I played a little football at Cornell, and my brothers played at Cornell football track, and wanted to stay in shape. So, that's why I just jog on that soft track at Taconic Hills. No more 5Ks, but I want to just stay in shape. That was in Zermatt. That's where I skied this year with Switzerland and Italy. That was with my son years ago in Zermatt. Next year I'm going to probably ski Austria. It's been a number of years since I've skied in Austria. I've skied in France. But that's why Chile is one of the places I've never skied. In South America, I want to do that.
We were over 20 family members when we took that ski trip to Austria.
I'm an avid hunter here.
We had to rent the bus.
I'm an avid hunter here, but I've hunted... behind it is red deer horns from Hungary. I went wild boar hunting in Romania. But in Africa, I go with a camera. I just like to take the pictures. I like to see the wildlife. And I'm going to go over to Borneo and do that providence just to see the wildlife that they have. And that's why I want to do this trek to see the mountain gorillas while you still can. So...
You mentioned your family's from Russia and Hungary. And
yes.
Have you, do you have ties there?
We have relatives that still live in Hungary. I've stayed at the Hotel Gellert I've stayed at several times. The Hotel Gellert was not named after me or my father.
I told him the story.
Yeah, but I've stayed there. We have plates in our home that have Hotel Gellert. And... it's nice. But we do have relatives that managed to survive the war and are still outside of Budapest. Russia, my two brothers went there. Two of my brothers went there last year to where but there's nothing left. They just went to where the area she was from, and it is. There's no resemblance. There's not even a town there anymore. It was all gone.
I don't know if you know the word shtetl. Well, it was a shtetl.
Yeah, so there's nothing there. They went, but they wanted to try to find where it was. They went last year.
And one of the daughters, Molly, went.
Yeah, one of the daughters went too. So... My father-in-law was in the food importing business, and after the war, he started importing the Polish hams, which were the best canned hams, and then the Crocus in Atlanta, and then the business expanded, and asked me to go into business, and he offered me a trip to Africa to go on safaris, which I would have loved, but as I mentioned earlier, I was a country boy and I didn't want any part of working in New York City. So my brother took over the business, went into the business, took it over eventually, and now it does close to $1 billion a year. Very big business. And he's He has some big buildings, like in New York City, and he's in real estate, the Puck building, the 666 building. And he and his partners invested in major, major buildings. This Estee that's in Hudson, my brother and his partners just rented him in the Dumbo buildings in Brooklyn, 200,000 square feet. And that's more income than I have will ever get from all my apartments in 40 years, just that one lease, 200,000 square feet, to Estee Corporation in the Dumbo buildings. And that's just one lease. So, but there must be a reason they moved to Hudson. I mean, they're renting all this 200,000 square feet, but yet they have a building here, Hudson. So they must feel it has advantages. And I'm sure they're paying far less. They're probably owning this building far less than they're paying rent in New York City, or Brooklyn, I should say.
Well, part of New York.
Part of New York, yeah.
Although I don't know that Brooklynites would...
Anything else I can answer for you?
Well, yeah, I was actually just going to ask you if there's anything that we've missed. I mean, I have a couple of other, some follow-up questions, but were there some topics that you wanted to talk about that we haven't touched on yet?
Well, I just did. I think I did, to some degree, the quality of life is a tremendous advantage, whether it's Hudson or Hillsdale. I mean, it's just we're very fortunate. You know, you could just think what would happen if, and someday it will, unfortunately, if something happens in one of the tunnels or a bridge. What a chaos. And, you know, I
think... You have to live behind locked doors.
And more and more people, you know.
Alarm systems. And we don't have
that. Here, sometimes I leave the key in my car, which I shouldn't do. But I'm amazed if someone will run into a store for a minute and they'll lock the car and they'll check its locks. And, you know, we have a lot of advantages living up here.
Well, I do lock my car.
Yeah, my wife does. I don't.
As a woman, I feel it's important to do.
Are there people that you think should be kind of on the historical record that you've interacted with in Hudson? People whose names you want to say?
Well, I think fellow Jim Macker would be very good. Do you know Jim? Jim Macker, his wife was a teacher at Hudson High School. He went to Cornell, was in the ag school. He had his son go to Cornell. He's been very active with, the civic projects. He worked for Hudson City Savings Bank, and then he worked for Kinderhook Bank as the last few years, and now he's retired. But he certainly could give you a very good perspective of Hudson. So could an attorney like Tommy Rapport, if you haven't. Tommy
How about Bernie Karp?
Bernie Karp would be another one. Tommy Rapport grew up in Great Barrington, Mass., and then moved to Hudson. And he handled my legal work when he first started. Bernie Copps, I own the building that he grew up on in Philmont. I always tell him that to put a plaque, Bernie Copp grew up here. But that would be another good one. He's an accountant and a lawyer. And, you know, I think he basically spent his whole life in Hudson.
His office is right...
In the Hudson's, yeah. You probably have somebody like Scalera. Scalera grew up in a building that I since sold on the corner of 5th and Columbia, but that's where he grew up. And but Scalera would be an excellent one, you know. As the mayor, as somebody who grew up right on the corner of 5th and Columbia. And I think Scalera would be excellent, Dick Macker would be excellent. Tommy Rapport didn't grow up in Hudson, but he moved here as a young attorney. That would be in the 60s probably. Yeah. Bernie caught whole practice here. His uncle started the practice and he came back to it. And, you know, it's good because a lot of people, they couldn't wait to move away. And you have some that's, you know, stayed. We're fortunate that we have one out of our five that is still in the area. You know, I mean,
but a lot. And if you want somebody local in Hillsdale, how about Bob Atwood?
Well, no, they want, they're talking about Hudson. But these are four, these, a cop was a lawyer and accountant, you know, Rapport and Scalera, those, and Jim Macra. Jim Macra would give you a very good perspective, I think.
I'm going to ask you one more question. So what do you think is going to happen to Hudson?
Macra or ER.
What do you think is going to happen in Hudson?
Well, I think Hudson is going to, it's like the snowball. You roll it downhill. I think you're going to see change at a faster rate. I think you're going to see, I think Columbia Street here will become the second Warren Street as Warren Street fills up. I think you're going to see, continue to see a more diverse community. You're going to continue to see people commuting. I mean, that train is so great. You know, you're going to have more and more people value living up in this area. I mean, even you'll have people who may be on welfare. If you're going to be on welfare, why not be on welfare in the country as opposed to being welfare in the city? So I didn't mention it, but you have a certain number of people, forget about the drug traffic and all that, you have a certain amount of people that want to raise their children and maybe have hard, dire circumstances, but they feel it's far better to bring children up in this area than it is in the projects in New York. So, you know, I think that's part of that's been neglected, that you do have some decent people that are moving up. You have some people that are involved in drugs and no good at all, but you'll always have that. But you have people moving up, and look, if I'm going to be on welfare, why not? And then if they can get their children to move on. And I think the schools are making more of an effort to get kids to improve their grades and go on to college. When growing up in Hillsdale, and Hudson would be the same, maybe not to that degree, but when my son was at Cornell ready to graduate, he said only 10% of his high school class went on to college, four-year colleges. When I graduated Rojan, our parents were immigrants or farmers, and they wanted their children to go to college. There was no stigma about going on to college. When my son graduated Cornell, the only ones left in Hillsdale at that time were those who couldn't get out for the most part. So we had a 10-year age gap between my oldest daughter and my next kids. My daughter, who was 10 years the oldest of the three, when she was in grade school, they made fun of her because she got good grades. So we sent the next three kids to private school, and where there was no stigma about doing well. By the time my grandkids, my son and his kids, they have dollars for scholars at Rojan. Jim Macra then started in Hudson, dollars for scholars, and there was emphasis on getting kids to go on to college. And there are enough people who've gone to school or who have professional jobs where they want their youngsters to go on to school. And the whole thing has changed. And I think that's a positive impact. And that's what, I think that's the best hope in the school system of Hudson, where they're raising the level, and they're making an effort. That's the main thing, that they're making an effort. And it isn't a dead-end street, which it was years ago.
That's great. Thank you very, very, very much. I'm going to stop this.